Hey, good morning, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on 107.7 The End. My name is Tommy Howe. Tree Huggers International is a weekly environmental affairs and natural science program for the listeners of 107.7 The End and all of Western Washington, from the Columbia River to the San Juan Islands and everyone in between. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. And Brendan, that was really short for one of my introductions too, by the way. That was
quick and to the point.
That was to the point. Joining us this morning on Tree Huggers International is Brendan Smythe, the marketing manager of the Seattle-based website grist.org, a website cited by noted environmentalists like Lori David, and a Seattle.com institution, if you will, which approaches environmental matters with a humorous, fun, day-to-day approach that more than one person has compared to The Daily Show's approach to current events or The Onion's online attitude. Please welcome to the program Brendan Smythe. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Tommy.
How many times has your website been called irreverent?
We describe it that way ourselves, so we're probably guilty as much as anyone else for giving it that label, but we're happy to have it because it's a good description for what we do.
Now, how long has the website been around? How long have you guys been doing this?
Well, it was started in 1999 by our president and founder, Chip Giller. He was originally approached by Dennis Hayes at the Earth Day Network to start a newsletter. Email was the big thing in 99. And so he started up the Grist as a way to get environmental news, commentary, information out to people that were using the web to get their information. And as good things on the web can do, it just grew and grew and grew virally. It started out just sending it to 100 friends and colleagues, and they forwarded it to their friends, and more people asked to get on the list. And in 2003, it got to a point where Earth Day really couldn't provide the resources that Grist needed to continue growing at the pace that they were. So at that point, in 2003, we became an independent nonprofit, 501c3, and started seeking funding specifically on our own for Grist. And since then, we've been doubling our audience every year.
When did the website take on the tone, if you will? I guess comedic is probably the wrong word, but irreverent tone, I suppose.
Right. That was from the get-go. And when Chip started, I mean, his background is in environmental journalism. And he just felt that the environmental movement was just so earnest and so dry and so filled with doom and gloom that he just got tired of reading that kind of journalism. And so it was just kind of a late night session trying to figure out, like, what kind of a headline are we going to come up for this article? And just started tossing around some, punny, ridiculous headlines and put them in there, and got a great response from readers, and it stuck.
So the intention was always to, we're not going to be appealing to potentially earnest or very, very pious folks, tree huggers, if you will. And you're trying to reach a lot of folks who maybe aren't necessarily getting an environmental message.
Yeah, I think the old saying is a little sugar helps the medicine go down. And the last thing the environment needs is another earnest and serious, self-righteous soapbox. So where Chip and Grist feel that there was an opportunity was to reach out to a broader audience, beyond the green believers, to reach out to people that might have some level of interest in the environment, but aren't hardcore into policy and regulations, and appeal to them by giving them information that's serious. I mean, it is serious journalism, but it's injected with that sense of humor so that it's actually entertaining to read.
And I suppose that's where The Daily Show comparisons come in, because obviously a lot of folks our age, and certainly folks younger than us, wind up getting a lot of news information that is absolutely factual through The Daily Show, and the humor is the mode by which the message is delivered, and it's an accurate message.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a study that was done recently that said they compared the amount of news content in The Daily Show to the amount of news content in a local news show, and it was actually more. So just because you're spinning it or injecting it with this irreverent nature doesn't lessen the actual message that you're trying to get across. If anything, it enhances it so that people look forward to getting it. I mean, we have gotten so many emails from readers who've said that they used to subscribe to environmental news emails from a bunch of different sources, and slowly but surely they kept dropping them because it was just so depressing, and they just got, you know, couldn't stand to open another email. But ours was the one that they kept because they actually looked forward to opening it because it actually made them laugh.
You actually beat me to the punch on this, because I was going to read a bit that I saw in the paper, and I think this is kind of indicative of the attitude you guys aren't necessarily going for. And this is from the Seattle Times, but they're talking about a restaurant, and they're saying you can wash your hands with the eco-friendly soap, and surfaces are clean with a bleach alternative, and the walls are painted with paint that's low in toxic emissions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's clearly a lot of feel goodness in there, and of course that's the idea. They're talking about this restaurant, that's their hook, and that's fine, that's how they're positioning themselves. Do you think it is a little silly though to go to all these lengths to show, yes, we're using certain types of lumber for these tables? I mean, that's not necessarily giving you a good day-to-day approach as to how to keep green ideas in your life and what you do every day.
No, I mean, anything that kind of puts some green thought into, you know, what you're doing is great. You know, whether it's something big like the decision you make on the next car you buy, to what kind of wood you're going to use when you build a table for your restaurant, or what kind of paint you're going to put on your walls. And the goal for Grist, you know, our mission is to make green normal. I mean, we want people to, when they're making those decisions in life, to think about, well, what is better for the environment? What's the better choice here? Because with every decision, there is a choice that ultimately can be better for the environment. And it's up to you as an individual to decide what choice you want to make. And some people, it's just, you know, either a cost decision, or it's a convenience factor, or it's a bigger decision based on, you know, well, what's best from a sustainability standpoint. And we're not going to preach about, you know, well, you need, the small decisions aren't having an impact. You need to be, you know, either 100% in it or you're not in it at all. And to some degree, that's a lot of what the environmental movement in the past did. And that's what turned a lot of people off, was that it was, you know, if you weren't chaining yourself to a tree, then you weren't really supporting, you know, the environment. And that's your, you know, if you take that approach, you're abandoning a huge segment of the population. So, you know, I think that's great that they're doing that. Is it going to have the biggest impact? No. But is it going to potentially make someone think like, oh, wow, you know, if there's different choices of paint, there's different choices of lumber, you know, maybe there's lots of other environmental options that I'm not aware of.
Yeah. And it shouldn't have to come down to, you know, if you're not chaining yourself to a tree protesting, you know, a timber sale. You know, the whole all or nothing, you're with us or against us mode has gotten us into trouble in a number of different ways. And it certainly is a two-way street with that. And you mentioned using, well, of course, the article that I quoted from mentioned using some green materials. But then you brought in a couple of articles here. And obviously, this is radio, so we can't necessarily show these things. But you brought in this probably the most interesting skateboard. That's a big one, too.
That's a longboard.
That I've ever seen. And yeah. It's made, well, why don't you talk about the skateboard?
Yeah, I mean, the days that usually I ride my bike into work, and the days that I have to drive in, I'll park, pretty far from where our office is because that's where the free parking is. and rather than, you know, walk into the office from there, I prefer to skate. So I got, was looking at, longboards, and, there was an option that I wasn't aware of before, that this board was made from bamboo. And bamboo is a hardwood. It's a sustainable wood because it grows so quickly. I mean, in some parts of the world, bamboo grows up to, you know, 3 feet a day. So it can be harvested and grown sustainably. And as a bonus, it looks beautiful. It's a beautiful looking board. So it was a no-brainer for me in terms of decision, you know, looking at that board versus the other boards. One, the graphics on it were cool, so I was down with that. But then also just the fact that it was made with a sustainable materials, you know, if I've got a choice between two products and they're equal in terms of price or comparable, I'm going to go with the sustainable one every time.
Sure, yeah. And then how does that do weight-wise, just out of curiosity, too, with the wood?
It's great. Yeah, it's no heavier than a standard skateboard. I mean, because it's a longboard, it's got more weight behind it, but those aren't meant to be doing tricks on. That's just for you're on a flat surface and you're cruising. Like I took that down to Alki the other night and just cruised down along the nice paved sidewalk and it was beautiful.
And then you also brought a backpack with you. I guess it's kind of a day pack or a backpack.
Yeah, backpack.
Now, this backpack has got something I have never seen on a pack before, and you gotta talk about this.
Yeah, I actually just came back from Bonnaroo, and we were using this backpack as an incentive to get people signed up for one of our free email lists. And it's from a company based in D.C. that have been really good to us. They've been good friends. So the backpack's called Juice Bag. And it's the front flap of the backpack has a thin film solar panel on it. And the solar panel is connected to a cigarette lighter adapter. So all you need is a charger that plugs into a standard car cigarette lighter. And you can charge up a cell phone, a PDA, an MP3 player, digital camera, any small digital device directly from the sun. And so I was using that all weekend at in Bonnaroo to charge up my cell phone.
That's such a great idea. And why not? I mean, if it's going to be facing your back and melting your cheese sandwich, it should be at least powering your telephone while you're at it.
Exactly. And, you know, this is the future, you know, is just integrating these small elements of green design into actual items that you use every day. And that's the kind of stuff that we talk about at grist.org. You know, what are the solutions that are relevant to your everyday life?
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on 107.7 The End. My name is Tommy Helm, and our guest is Brendan Smythe, marketing manager of the Seattle-based environmental website, grist.org. And I want to talk more about some day-to-day green ideas real quickly, though, and I dropped Lori David's name in at my introduction because I drop her name whenever I get the chance to go ahead and do that.
Sure, who doesn't?
But you guys have had some involvement with her?
She's been a supporter. She's been a big fan of what we do, and she's helped introduce us to some folks down in L.A. We haven't really worked together in an official capacity. Stop Global Warming is her campaign that she started, and they'll link to some Grist content, and we'll mention them when they're doing some cool events. So we're in the same space, and we're complementary as far as our goals and what we're doing. But yeah, we're not involved in any official capacity with each other.
And then let me ask you, this is sort of a personal thing. This is the real subjective part of the program, I guess. One of the big goals I have for this program is expressing ideas of stewardship. It's a word that doesn't seem to get thrown around much anymore. And I think a generation ago, when you had a lot of folks who arguably are now graying hikers, were off crafting legislation and helping to get wilderness areas set aside and national park areas set aside, they had this idea of stewardship. This is the land. It's public land. It's ours. We need to take care of it. We need to take steps so that it's preserved for generations. And now we have a generation, really, where these vast tracts of public land, unspoiled, have always been available.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me, and a listener actually contacted me about this and brought up some additional points, like a lot of outdoor recreation entities sort of try and sell the idea as the outdoors as being a place where you find thrills and extreme sports and danger. I don't necessarily know if that's the right message to get across. Now, if that gets people outside and they're going, oh, cool, a bald eagle. Oh, cool, you know, a Doug fir. Great, then it's doing something there. But is there a way, and this is the big question, this is the magic bullet question, is there a way folks who are who might be into, you know, sports like you know, skiing or boarding, whatever, where their only experience may just be going out to Crystal to go board on a Sunday, is there any way that that idea of stewardship, that notion, can be really injected into them and say, hey, you know, that's cool that you're doing that, but there's all this other land that's just absolutely open to you if you have 2 feet. You know, or 1 foot, or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you got to reach people where they're at. So, you know, if somebody is into snowboarding, then in terms of getting that stewardship message across to them, it's going to be more effective to talk to them about climate change and global warming and how the first things that are going to be affected are the low-level ski resorts. And Snoqualmie Pass is, you know, right there at that level.
3,000 feet.
Some days it's raining, some days it's snowing. And as climate change continues to happen, they're going to be more and more adversely affected in terms of how many snow days they have. So somebody who's into snowboarding is going to respond to that a lot more than if you start try to tell them, like, well, there's all these other opportunities out in nature that you could also be taking advantage of, but you're not. So again, I think it's, you know, to each their own as far as like what avenue they come into stewardship. And it's not our position to dictate, you know, what is the right way or what is the better way to come into that. As long as they come into it, then that's what's important. Tying it back into what we talk about at grist.org is, you know, there's a lot of groups out there that talk about conservation and air, land, and water issues, and they do a great job of that. Grist reports that in our daily Grist and our weekly Grist news columns, but the focus of our original content is more on from an urban perspective. You know, what are the decisions or the choices that you're faced with on a daily basis that have an impact on the environment? You know, there's a lot of groups out there that cover conservation issues and do a great job of it. So that's not something that we feel like we need to cover. Where we felt there was a gap was from more of an urban perspective, you know, so that people think of the environment as they're going to work. You know, deciding the transportation choice that they're going to pick to get to their job, or when they're remodeling their house, thinking about, well, what, how can I conserve energy, or when they're buying food, you know, what's the better choice in terms of organic or buying local. So we try to reach people, you know, where they are.
You just beat me to the point again that I wanted to talk about the whole day-to-day stewardship approach, but yeah, and I agree that the whole day-to-day notion, I think, works better than an altruistic, preachy, if you will, approach. But what are some other day-to-day things in terms of like transportation options or things you may eat? What are some things that you do that seem to fit into an urban green lifestyle?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I ride my bike to work as often as I can. And that's just a double bonus where, you know, I'm not adding to the traffic, the congestion in town. I'm not burning carbon by driving, and I get a great workout, and I'm outside. Granted, you know, the weather can get a little nasty, but you know, it's never it's nothing that rain gear can't fix.
That was one of the things that first impressed me about Seattle, you know, because I came here visiting from the Midwest. And, you know, when it rains, you go inside because it's going to stop in 20 minutes. And here, everyone's out and they got their rain gear on and they got this real sort of, you know, work ethic, this sort of Scandinavian stoic work ethic. Right. We're going to pedal in the rain and we're going to go from Ballard to downtown and go do our jobs and stuff. And I was very impressed at how many folks, you know, rode their bikes around here.
Yeah. And I mean, Seattle's not the most bike friendly town either. I mean, you know, I definitely have to cross some railroad tracks and ride on the side of the road with 18 wheelers to get where I'm going. But the thing about Seattle is that it, you know, it has this reputation for, you know, all the rain that we get, but it never really rains hard. You know, it mists or it spits or, you know, you'll get a few drops, and that's totally manageable. I mean, if it's a downpour, I'm not going to go out on my bike. You know, I'll jump on the bus and, you know, bus in that day. But those days are rare. You don't get like a torrential downpour here very often.
So talk to me about some of the music-related promotions and awareness campaigns Grist.org has been doing with some folks in the music business. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but why don't you refresh my memory and get me up to speed on some of the folks you've been working with.
Sure. I mean, Grist is a bit different than most environmental groups that are out there, whereas we're a media organization, so we're not advocating for a specific campaign or a specific issue. Our approach is more, we cover the environment as a news organization, the environmental movement, and talk about, you know, just what's going on. You know, we kind of take the pulse of sort of the modern green movement and you know, talk to the influencers and the main people that are involved in deciding or framing, you know, where that movement's going. You know, part of those influencers is pop culture. You know, pop culture has a tremendous impact on trends and awareness. So we've started working with musicians to, you know, help spread the word about Grist, help get awareness for Grist.org out to their fans. You know, it starts out just simply, you know, we'll interview, you know, bands that are you know, supporting the environment or trying to raise environmental awareness with their fans. We've interviewed Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam. We've interviewed Mike D from the Beastie Boys. We did a review of Bonnaroo last year. We've interviewed Bare Naked Ladies, Guster. You know, these are all artists who are very vocal about their support of the environment, and not only vocal, but actually walking the talk as well.
Yeah.
You know, they're integrating biodiesel into their buses for their tours. They're using organic cotton in their merchandise. They're reducing waste as much as they can. They're using organic caterers for their backstage. You know, they're offsetting their emissions that for the entire tour using carbon credits. So these are the artists that you know, we want to work with because they're, you know, they get it. You know, so we've been on tour with Guster and Bare Naked Ladies where they've had these eco villages set up in front of house at their concerts, where that promote environmental causes, issues, local environmental organizations, companies that are also supporting environmental causes, like Cliff Bar, Stonyfield Farm, or have organic products. And so we've been fortunate to hook up with a couple of groups that kind of put together these eco villages that tour with these different artists. Right now we're on tour with John Mayer. We're going to be sponsoring Xavier Rudd, who's from Australia. He's coming to Seattle soon. We're going to be a sponsor for his show. When I was at Bonnaroo, I was on a panel with John Butler from the John Butler Trio, and they're also, you know, very environmentally aware in terms of how they tour. So, and it's happening more and more. There's more and more artists that are, you know, starting to integrate these practices into how they do business, because the precedent has been set. You know, there's now a network of biodiesel fueling stations across the country, so it's easy for bands to hit these stations as they're going from town to town. And so, again, it's if you've got the option to do something the sustainable way versus not, why wouldn't you choose sustainable?
Well, you know, I was in Southern California last year for the big biodiesel convention, which happened in San Diego, and I got to meet Willie Nelson.
Nice.
I got to tell you, that was a cool moment.
Bio Willie.
And I stood this far from Daryl Hannah, who still looks awesome, but come on, Willie Nelson, my goodness.
Yeah, huge, huge biodiesel proponent, you know. He's been leading the charge. He was out in front on this issue years and years ago. It's great that he's going to be doing the 4th of July picnic out here this year.
You guys just had some pretty good press in a big national outdoorsy magazine, and that was actually what prompted me to reach out to you guys. I think Schwarzenegger was on the cover of it or something.
Yeah,
like
he
that.
Was on the cover of all the green magazine, green issues in April.
Was that Esquire or which? Was that Outside?
It was Outside Magazine, but he was also on the cover of Newsweek, which also did a profile on us in that issue as well.
So have you been getting a lot of reaction to all this press lately or?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely gotten, we've received more attention, more requests for partnerships are coming our way. We're getting a lot more requests for advertising. Part of Grist's business model is earned income is through advertising on the website. So that's been great. Every little bit helps.
I meant to ask you, is there a music portion of the grist.org website where folks could go and see some pictures from last year's Bonnaroo or your tour with John Mayer, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there's a search function on the homepage that you can type in music and it'll pull up all the music content on the site. So whether it's an interview that we've done or whether it's a blog post or whether it's a news item, it'll pull up anything that's been tagged as music. The site is really user-friendly in terms of if there's a specific topic that you're interested in, you just search on that topic and there's going to be more articles than you can read because we've been doing this for a long time now.
Now, I think I know what Grist is, G-R-I-S-T, but why don't you tell me what it is and then I'll tell you if that's what I thought it was.
Sure. Back in the day, when the farmers, and actually probably still, when they'd bring their crops in from the fields, you'd have to separate the grain from the chaff. And to do that, you'd take it to the grist mill. And so the grist mill would grind up the crop and would separate the grain, like for wheat, it would separate the grain from the chaff. And so the grain is the grist. And that's the sustainable part of the crop. It's the one that has the most sustenance to it.
Catcher in the rye sort of thing.
Exactly.
I was totally off. I was completely off. You know what I was thinking of? I was thinking of gristle. Because I like steak. That's why. So I thought it was...
I can see the connection there, but no, not so much on the meat thing. We're publishing a lot of content right now, music-related stuff, because we just got back from Bonnaroo. So now's a great time if you're a music fan to go to grist.org. We had a chance to speak with Michael Frani from Spearhead.
Cool.
And as I mentioned, Xavier Rudd, John Butler. We're hopefully going to be talking to Wilco. So there's going to be a lot of good music content on the site. And then with Live Earth coming up on July 7th, we've been providing some content for the Live Earth website that's on MSN. A lot of that, we're doing like some top 15 lists, like the top 15 green musicians, the top 15 green actors, stuff like that. Now's a good time to go check out grist.org.
Have a look at it. Make it a part of your daily web routine. Grist.org, giving you some good day-to-day ideas on environmental sustainability and a couple of good laughs, too, in between.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be entertained. And we've got 7 different email lists that you can sign up for, so we can send the information straight to you. So whatever your interest is, you know, whether it's food, whether it's pop culture trends, whether it's politics, you know, there's going to be something on the site that is going to interest you. You know, check it out and sign up for one of our emails and, you know, hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Looking forward to what you guys have to say about China shooting past the U.S. and carbon dioxide emissions.
Yeah, actually, Dave Roberts, who runs our blog, just had a big post about that, saying that we're still the ones that are importing all the products from China and manufacturing all our products in China. And so that burns a lot of carbon that to get all that stuff over here. So even though they've passed us, we can't really sit back and say, well, it's not really our problem anymore.
We just got to show some environmental leadership for once.
That's what we need.
People pay attention to what the U.S. does. You know? If we take a leadership step in that, people go, oh, okay, America's doing that. We'll do that too.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that your listeners can do that really is going to have the greatest impact is to vote. And that's where the biggest influences in terms of green issues, green legislation, is by doing research on candidates, finding out where they stand on environmental issues, and supporting those candidates.
Hear, hear, Brendan Smythe, outstanding. That's an excellent way to close the program. I couldn't agree with you more, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
Marketing manager from grist.org. Again, check it out. It's GRIST. .org. Brendan, thanks very much, buddy.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Enjoyed my time.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International. We've run out of time again, but we'll be back next Sunday morning at 7:30 for a chat with the Wilderness Society about the impending Wild Sky Wilderness in Snohomish County, which is currently in the final stages of legislation in the Senate before being passed along to President Bush. Once passed, the Wild Sky will become Washington State's first official wilderness since the passage of the Washington Wilderness Act of 1984. Yeah, it only took another 23 years, but we'll get the whole story of the ups and downs of the Wild Sky in Congress these last few years next week on Tree Huggers International. Thanks again to Brendan Smythe from grist.org for joining us this morning, and remember, you can listen to Tree Huggers International anytime, for any reason, by going to the Tree Huggers International page at 1077theend.com and clicking on the episode you want to hear. Or go to treehuggersintl.com. That's treehuggersintl.com. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 7:30, but in the meantime, relax, make a bowl of cereal, get some fruit, scramble some eggs, and get ready for Jim Keller's Resurrection Flashback Sunday next on 1077 The End. I'm Tommy. See you guys next week. Be well.